Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 252 of Swish and Flick.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Katie. And this episode is sponsored by Allie McCann. Thank you, Allie.
Thanks, Allie.
We are also joined by another special guest host. Everyone say hi to Marcus, a.k.a. the Grandpa. Welcome. You're supposed to say hi.
I'm supposed to say something. Hey, everybody. It's not in the Google Doc. I didn't know I was supposed to talk here.
He's Grandpa. He's Hogwarts IT. He's part of the Whizgiz. He loves Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep. Yep, really that's do. Basically Marcus in a little nutshell, for real. But we're excited to have you on. And this whole episode idea is because of Marcus, and I'm excited to talk about it. We're discussing something a little different, wizarding economics. Bust out your
Welcome
textbook.
Welcome to high school, baby.
Let's do it. But before that.
That's the last time I took an economics class, let me tell you.
Yeah, same. before we begin, let's go to Meg for the weekly profit.
All right, yo, I'm here. So
you didn't zone out again?
No, I every week, like when I do the weekly profit, I will just like on Google, there's like a news thing that you can search, and I'll search like Harry Potter, Wizarding World. Sometimes I'll like pick some of the actors. There like was nothing. So we're in a slow news cycle right now, but I wanted to reiterate details for Wizardly Weekend, because this will be the episode that comes out the weekend before Wizardly World of Kent. So again, all four of us are going to be there. We have the entirety of Dan Smith Park in downtown Kent. We are going to be doing two costume contests. The first costume contest is going to be at noon, and that is going to be for kids for 13 and under. Is it 13 or 14 and under? I think it's 13 and under, because it's 14 and up for the adult. Okay. At 2 o'clock, we're going to be doing a live podcast, and our topic of choice, we have decided in response to recent things that have happened in our world, is going to be women in the wizarding world. We just want to talk about all the BA women and how cool we are.
And try to keep it to an hour. It's going to be impossible.
It is going to be impossible, yeah. But we'll see. And we also are going to tech issues. I hope that there's none, but like, you know, stuff happens. We're going to do our best to live stream the episode on YouTube for patrons who can't come to Wizardly World of Kent. We have a couple people who are going to be there who are going to like help us out that day. And shout out to Chrissy, because I'm going to hand her my phone with YouTube Live. Go in and say, can you please record us for an hour while we talk? But it's going to be July 23rd at 2 o'clock.
Oh, I thought it
is when the podcast is. Oh my gosh, the storm seriously came out of nowhere. And then the adult costume contest is 14 and up, and that is at 4 o'clock. So it's basically like every 2 hours that day, something is going on for us. and then also, while we are not doing those three things, we will be at our booth, which is also going to be at Dan Smith Park. To hang out with you guys, meet whoever is there. Danny DeVito, our cardboard cutout, is going to be there for pics. We're also going to have some merch for sale. We ordered new t-shirts, new like purple logo t-shirts. I like the purple better on these shirts, so I'm excited. And we're also going to be having just like some random stuff that's actually not listed on the website yet. My goal is to list it on the website one day eventually, but you know, life. So we're going to have some random merch. And then my mom also crocheted headbands to sell for donations to Katie's run fund for her dopey challenge. It's the American Cancer Society. So like 100% of the proceeds of those items will go to that. And also, two things, because when this comes out, you will still be able to purchase tickets for the Wobbly Wizard Bar Crawl on Friday night, July 22nd, and the Bell Tower Ball on Saturday evening at 7:30. Both of those events are still available to get tickets for. Katie and I and Sarah will be at both of those. I'm excited for this ball on Saturday because it's at a brewery that I actually have never been to. That is like a new brewery that's in downtown Kent called Bell Tower. And the, like, where it is, it's like in an old church or something. So it's like, just looks really pretty, especially like for a Hogwarts ball. So I'm excited.
He and just sneezed all over me.
Biggie?
No.
Phil? Sorry. And all the information for all of those can be found at mainstreetkent.org/events/wizardly-weekend. That's where all the links are to get tickets, etc. and whatnot. So yeah.
I pulled up Bell Tower and the hall looks really cool. It looks very much like the Great Hall.
Yeah, it does. It's so pretty.
It's so cool.
Make sure to follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends, because if you like us, then they might too. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and TikTok. Wow, sorry. My brain immediately said the old spiel and forgot to say TikTok. Anyway, you can find us at Swish Flick Cast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/SwishFlickCast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going and it gives you access to our exclusive Felix Files episodes, our Discord channel, live recordings, trivia games, Swish Swag Boxes, and more. Update on Swish Swag Boxes. Everything for the boxes is ordered, approved. We're just waiting for production to finish and they're going to be shipped to us. And
I'm really excited.
The goal is for all the boxes to get out the last week of July. So be on the lookout for our unicorn, our Thunderbird and unicorn patrons.
It's a good one.
It is. I'm excited. Thank you all so much for your support. Send, if you would like to send your Potter story, which we are always accepting, or any questions or concerns, you can do so to our email, which is swishflickcast@gmail.com.
Do you know what time it is now? We gotta learn all about Grandpa. Marcus, tell us all about yourself. We want your whole little brief Potter intro.
The whole spiel?
Yep.
Okay, so I am a Hufflepuff with Slytherin tendencies. And I say that I have Slytherin tendencies because I'm petty.
Are you saying that I'm petty?
No, I'm saying I am. you can determine what Slytherin tendencies you manifest.
I definitely
you can determine that yourself.
My wand is Cherry. It is 13¾ inches. It is a phoenix feather core. I've taken the Patronus test multiple times, so I'm just gonna go ahead and tell y'all, like, the day the Patronus test came out on, what is it now? It's like Wizarding World. It used to be Pottermore. When it first came out on Pottermore, I did it on my phone and I got a calico kitten. And then it was really like laggy that one time that I did it. And then I did it like multiple times since then. And each time since then, I've gotten a hound dog, like some form of hound, which I feel like more truly matches like my personality.
I feel like that fits in. Yeah.
And then my favorite book is Order of the Phoenix. I don't know why it's my favorite book. I can't really articulate it.
Do you just like angst?
Okay, so do y'all y'all remember, it may just be because I'm grandpa, but like I remember the hiatus when she wrote the fourth book between the fourth book and the fifth book and the painful hiatus.
I like got on board years. Like in the middle of it. So same. It didn't feel as long lucky. For me.
Yeah.
It was still like felt like a long time, but not as long as other people waited.
And I feel like it was like you had been in a desert for a while and here was a glass of water. And so like
I get
it was
that.
Like Order of the Phoenix, yeah. But also like part of the reason I love Order of the Phoenix is that like battle scene at the end of Order of the Phoenix between so Dumbledore good. And Snape, and you realize how BA Dumbledore is. It's
wait,
awesome.
You mean Dumbledore and Voldemort?
Yeah.
You said Snape.
Oh, Lord, that's terrible. Oh God. Okay.
Welcome. You are now part of the
government corruption right? order.
I'm gonna like say the wrong name multiple times.
I agree. And then for sure,
my favorite movie was Prisoner, and I think like the same thing happened there. There was like a gap between Chamber and Prisoner, and by the time you got to Prisoner, the like the whole trio had like aged up, and like they had really come into their own as far as acting. Like Emma, just like she was an actress in that movie. Like she was no longer a child actor delivering lines. Like she was an actress at that point. And I feel the same was true for Rupert and for Daniel. So I love that movie. And then my favorite character is Dumbledore, because he's BA.
I didn't know that about you.
I do love Dumbledore. Every time Tiff is like arguing her side for Dumbledore, I'm like, get him, Tiff, get him. And then I got into Harry Potter because I was working at the library in college. I actually worked in the library system during college, and it's literally been the favorite job, my most favorite job that I've ever had. And when you're working in the library system, you see what books are like hot, like, because they're like, people are coming in requesting them constantly, and they're like on back order and all this kind of stuff. And so I was like, you know, this Harry Potter stuff is really popular. I should probably like, you know, see if I like it or whatever. And so I actually started listening to them on cassette tape.
Cassette, on my commute, yes.
On my commute to when I was in junior college, I had about a 45 minute commute to junior college. And so like, I listened to Jim Dale read Harry Potter to me, and it was amazing.
That's awesome.
I love that. Those audiobooks hold probably the most special place in my heart when it comes to Harry Potter. Like my favorite thing for Harry Potter is the audiobooks. I could listen to the Harry Potter audiobooks over and over and over. Jim Dale specifically, and never get sick of them.
Jim Dale doing the voices is like, oh yeah. I had two friends that went to New York for something, and they were like, oh, we went to a pub tonight and we got to like see Jim Dale. And I was like starstruck. I was like, oh, I'm so jealous, so cool that you like met Jim Dale.
That's amazing. Like,
right?
That's so cool.
But yeah, so that's my spiel. Oh, and I have a song to introduce our topic for today.
I'm really curious. I'm
so excited for this.
All right. I'm doing this, what is it called when you do it without backup music? Acapella. I'm doing this acapella, so bear with me. I hope y'all recognize this. My galleons don't rattle, rattle. They're gold. I'd like to see you muggle, muggle, for sure. It makes me want to expellimalius, you know, flying in my anglier. You really shouldn't see it. Six Weasleys in a compact, no slack. But luckily, the seats go back. Arthur's got a knack to relax. In his shed, sipping some mold wine.
Oh my God.
Applause.
Awesome. Can I make that a TikTok sound on Swish's account?
Go for it.
Yes. Oh my God. That was amazing. How long did that take? Did it just like roll? Or did you really think about it?
It was one of those things that it was just like, it popped in my head and I was like, I have to make this happen. And I was literally like looking up words that would work. So
I love that.
That's amazing.
That's like what I do when I sing to Phil.
Oh yeah.
I make up songs to him, to other songs. My favorite one lately is Hey Philly. Philly. You are my puppy love.
He's looking at you.
And I love you oh so much. Philly.
That's the best part.
I love it. That's so great.
I have so many. That's one of many.
He's so happy right now. He's like, yeah, sing to me, Mom.
Yeah. You like when I sing to you. My God, I love
it. Oh, well, that was a wonderful way to start this episode. That was amazing. Thank you. Yeah. And it now lives forever in audio history. Maybe just for you. Wow. We'll put it on a cassette and send it your way.
For grandpa.
Right.
I love cassettes.
Cassettes are pretty sweet.
I bought Taylor Swift's albums on cassette whenever she had them on her web store. Why? And then I went on Amazon and bought a cassette player. I still haven't listened to them. But like I bought a Walkman.
I was obsessed with high-speed dubbing. I used to make mixtapes back in the day. I was that person.
That's awesome.
My cousin always did. I was obsessed with the song Sgt. Pepper's by the Beatles. And I made my cousin make me a tape of that song repeated over and over and over for as long as the cassette would let you do it. And it was back when you had to like be quiet because it was literally just recording the sound. So like there was one point in it where like my great aunt had come in the door and we were like, no. Oh my god,
that's amazing,
man. Oh, that brings back memories. That cassette tape that you just sent looks so 90s.
Memorex,
like that is right? Just straight up 90s.
You could get a whole pack of those.
Yeah, core memory unlocked, because yep. I did the high speed dubbing, which didn't require like you'd actually record the audio live, but I've also done what you were talking about where you actually recorded the audio live, and if somebody came in and spoke, it was like on that track forever.
Yeah, and you're like, dang it. So yeah, my tape just had my great aunt's the creaky door opening and we're like, no!
Get out, you're ruining the tape.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Am I starting this episode off?
Yeah.
Weird. Okay, well, it's a doozy right off the bat. So we're going to be talking about Wizarding Economics. I didn't do well in this class in school, but this is wizarding, so I think maybe I would do better. We'll
heck
see.
Yeah, anything related to Harry Potter I do better on than in real time life, so let's be honest.
Yeah,
I put more effort into these notes than I ever did on any homework assignment.
right. Yeah, so let's see. So I'm gonna start talking sort of about like the wizard definition of poor versus the muggle definition of poor. Basically, like, why are there even poor wizards? Because that seems to be an argument point around the internet, and people on the internet delivered real answers. Like, these people have to have some sort of degree in economics or something, because this one person wrote like it could have been an essay. It was pretty amazing and I learned things. So my first like points and everything come from Stack Exchange. Heyo. This person asked like, why don't the Weasleys or other poor wizarding folk, why don't they just like conjure up a bunch of diamonds or gold or et cetera and sell it to muggles and get rich? Like, how can wizard society still possibly have poor people? We do know that there's like laws, like we know that there's the food law, but like we only know that one. So there's not, aren't aware of whether or not there's other laws, but after we get through all this, we can assume that there is. So basically there's two types of monetary wealth in Harry Potter. There's muggle money and there's wizard money. Muggle money is used to purchase goods and services from muggles. Wizarding money is used to purchase goods and services from wizarding society. For the most part, there's very little that members of the wizarding world want or need from the muggle world. So this person that I'm reading
from...
What
about groceries?
I'll get there.
Okay. I was like, right. They probably, like a lot of them probably go into like a muggle grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll get there.
Arthur doesn't know anything about muggle money though, so like what do they do? I'm just so, it's so interesting.
I know there's plot holes for sure. So this person says, even like say there is a witch or wizard who does want something from the muggle world, and they decided we're going to conjure up a bunch of gold, a bunch of jewels, and like somehow they would have to find a way to convert that into muggle currency. And then trying to sell a small fortune of some sort of valuable merchandise, one is not quick, two is not easy, and you'd have to attempt to do it like legally, which is just probably not possible. So like in short,
go to a pawn shop.
Maybe I'm sure there are wizarding pawn shops. Kind of Borgin like, Burks is kind of a pawn shop almost.
Yeah, he does buy things.
Yeah. I don't know if he would ever sell them back to you, but I'm just picturing, what was that show called? The Pawn Shop Show. Pawn Stars.
Pawn Stars.
Yeah. I had to say that carefully because it almost sounded like a different word to me. But basically, in short, it's no, there is no doubt. Hold on. It is no doubt possible for a wizard to get very rich in Muggle currency, but that doesn't mean that it's easy or convenient or useful to do. For wizarding money, it's almost certain that you can't like summon that or duplicate it. And the whole point, here's where we get like real textbook, and I got excited because I learned things. The whole point of currency is to act as this thing that you exchange for goods and services. It has a value. It's worth exchanging for those goods and services of a similar value. So for that to work, everyone has to agree that this is the value and we have to keep that value stable. So we have to assume that there are checks and balances, though. I mean, I thought we had checks and balances, whatever. We this have to assume that. World. Yeah.
They live in medieval times, but also current times.
Yeah. Yeah. So we can assume there are checks and balances to make sure that there isn't magical forgery, or at least that it's difficult. I don't think it's impossible, but difficult. And then anyone who is caught would obviously be disciplined because you can't just be printing your own money.
I love this. Brandon just said, this just reminds me of the fact that money isn't real.
Right?
And Lily said, right? Like,
right?
Like paper money. It's just paper, but we assign it a value.
I mean, people used to like exchange rocks when we were like cave people, you know? Like, it's, right? It's fake.
Look at this beautiful rock. Please give me a zucchini.
Right. You have mammoth fur and I want it. I'll trade you this rock. Okay. But like now we have stupid paper that.
Why did I say zucchini?
I don't know. What?
She give was going me, into you, the gatherer.
You even did it.
You face, said not mammoth the hunter fur. Face.
A zucchini.
Oh, we see who has the hunter roll and who has the gatherer roll.
Yeah, we know that those cave people were definitely eating all the zucchinis for sure. Anyway.
I like zucchini.
So do I. So do I.
Phil likes zucchini.
Phil, do you like zucchini?
Yeah, he does.
Also, if you're conjuring gold or transmuting glass into diamonds, or you're doing some other sort of conjuring wealth, if that was possible, then those materials wouldn't be valuable to wizards, because why would one wizard buy or trade for diamonds that another wizard conjured when they could just do it themselves? So it kind of just like negates it. So there's not really any point to trying to get rich that way, because then everybody could get that rich that way and then nobody be rich. It'd just be the same.
Unless you don't do it legally.
But then you'll go to Azkaban.
True.
Okay, so this next article is from good old Cora.
So you're saying,
Cora,
quickly, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So you're saying basically like the reason why it works is because as a society.
As a society, we have accepted that value. We have accepted that as it. So that's what it is.
So if wizards could just conjure, they would throw off the whole system.
Well, and also there's like two references in the series where, so like the first one is the Sorcerer's Stone. So we know one of the things that makes the Sorcerer's Stone valuable is the fact that you can use it to create gold.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of considered a rare thing. Like the Sorcerer's Stone is kind of unique in that. And then the other instance where there's counterfeit gold is when we're at the
World Cup.
Yeah, and the leprechauns create the leprechaun gold, and then you find out that leprechaun gold disappears. So so those are the only two instances where you see like, or you hear about magic being used to make gold specifically. I don't know about like other precious objects, but yeah,
that's interesting. So like, I wonder if she does have something in her head regarding like rules to this. There's just never been an opportunity or an instance for her to like explain it, you know. This would be like prime information for like an encyclopedia of some sort.
Bingo. Yeah.
Like authors don't want to give explicit information on stuff like that, because then they back themselves into a corner.
Yeah,
like, oh, true. No, very well, you true said this.
Yeah, especially, and I almost sometimes I think about how like you know, like, we're so nitpicky with these books. Like, she never thought people were going to do what we do to these books, you know? It's just weird.
Right. Okay, so this article from Cora, this person, like, we could have just read what they said and made that into an episode. Like, I didn't even pull everything from it. So knowledgeable, and like, it made sense. Like, please explain something to me like I'm a kindergartner. Got it. So basically they're saying not everything can be conjured. Kind of like went over that. Also, we see all these shops in Diagon Alley in Hogsmeade. At least like those are the ones we're exposed to through Harry. They're all selling different items. They all seem to have been there for a long time, like a really long time.
Yeah.
If a business can't make good profit margins, they're not going to be around that long. So there must be some sort of restrictions on conjuring or transfiguring an item to be sold. There's got to be like patents and whatnot. For example, all these different brooms, there's the Firebolt, there's a Clean Sweep, there's the Nimbus. There's a bunch of different manufacturers, and they all push these different charm benefits as part of their marketing. Their charms are unique. So there's got to be some sort of patent even on magic.
But like, imagine how much money a place can make in the Wizarding World. Because like, okay, yes, you created this Firebolt, but like, to make more, you just duplicate it.
So that was actually something I was kind of curious about, because we know the Gemino curse exists, because that's what Hermione uses to like duplicate the locket. But you always are of the impression that like the duplicate is inferior, like it doesn't carry forward the magical properties. Okay. Because like,
yeah, that's true.
There was a duplicate of Gryffindor's sword somewhere. I forget. Was it in the vault? Was there a duplicate in the vault?
Yes.
And but it didn't have the magical properties that Gryffindor's sword actually has. So maybe, wonder, yes, you can easily make a duplicate, but it's not going to carry over the magical properties.
They can duplicate like the wood, like the source materials, but then they have to like put all of the magical properties into it. And that is what.
Right.
Really like raises the value of it.
Each Firebolt does have a hand stamped serial number.
It
does.
It does.
What number is Harry's? 7?
Probably.
Oh, wow.
His is 777.
Anyway. It's just interesting because like, you think so much of like overhead costs for businesses in the quote muggle world. Like, technically they have to buy one piece of wood and then they duplicate it, one stick and they duplicate it for like the bottom of the Firebolt, you know what I mean? And then like, but like for a muggle company, that is so much cost that wizards don't have.
True.
So it's almost like comparing, and like this is a whole bigger picture of this whole topic, but like, that almost means potentially that like Wizarding World salaries are, even though they may match some muggle salaries in terms of what they do, they're much richer in the Wizarding World because they have a lot less costs. So like,
talk a little bit about that.
Do you?
Sort of. No, but go on. It's different than what you're saying.
So like, you know, and I talk about like some comparisons of like real world salaries to salaries in the Wizarding World. And I just like converted like how much they make in Wizarding society to like galleons and stuff. But like thinking, you know, an estimate of how much a barman or a barmaid makes is like 25,000 pounds. This was again just on Glassdoor. I know that there's like massive ranges. I just kind of went in the middle. So like 25,000 in real time life is on the lower end of a yearly salary. But for somebody like Rose Murda, who can use magic to like help boost up her garden, I mean, yes, she has to implement the initial costs of planting the garden, but like she can use magic to like keep it going and keep things flourishing, to like get more food for herself, so she has less costs for food. Or like, transportation. You know, she doesn't have to pay for gas. She doesn't have to pay for a car. She doesn't have to, I mean, like, okay, she could pay for a broom, which is expensive, but like, she also, if she's skilled enough, can apparate. I know I'm going literally all over the place because like this stuff is all in here for us to get to eventually, but it just like, it just thinks like, it just makes me think about how like, yes, Rosmerta makes the same potentially amount as like, you know, like a bartender in London, but the bartender in London makes the same amount and has so many more costs than Rosmerta on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like,
ugh, it's so true. It's so
magic.
True.
Magic is everything.
It's a huge equalizer.
Yeah. So it's almost like, it's almost just like, I think that that could potentially be a conversation for like why the Weasley family, and we talked about this a little bit with Becky on Molly's Felix Files, but like how Arthur has a government job, and I'm assuming as a government worker he probably makes a decent amount. I mean, he has to make a decent amount, obviously not as much as like Lucius or something like that, but he makes enough to get by for a huge family. And for them to have little splurges and still like go on trips every once in a while. And again, like, you know, average salary of like a government worker is probably on like, I looked it up and it estimated, I kind of compared him to like, I just looked up government worker in the UK and it said like estimate about £40,000. So like pretty good. Like an average type salary, but like with that amount of kids, that would really be stretching it, but they seem to be okay. So like he probably is okay because of the fact that they have magic and Molly is skilled with her garden and all of that kind of stuff. So like, I mean, food for a family that large would be so much money every single week for a family in the Muggle world. Thinking about like, you know, even just how much Katie and I spend on groceries, adding that up for like a whole year and then take that out of your salary, like that's a ton.
Yeah.
And they probably don't really, I mean, they might need some things every now and then, you know, like you see on their table Cheerios, right? Cheery Owls or something. Cheerios. So like they probably go and buy some of that stuff, but like I don't know, it's just interesting.
This person that I'm about to read has a different take than what you just said, but okay. I see both sides. Who's surprised?
I see both sides.
Is that a bingo slot? That should be. That should be a bingo,
right?
Slot.
I think it is.
I see both sides.
All right. So what Meg just said, this person has a different take. We're moving on.
They're wrong.
I mean, they could be.
I'm kidding.
We're moving on to...
I'm interested.
wages. So I just pulled directly from this article they wrote. So I'm just going to read a little bit from there. They say, we know from example of the Malfoy's lifestyle and the Potter Vault that industries such as potion making generate high levels of income. We know from the minuscule savings the Weasley family consistently reveals that working for the ministry is quite low. We know from the canon that most people seem to work for the ministry. Aside from the Malfoys, we see no family that is wealthy. Harry has wealth, but is restricted so much by his relatives as by the International Statute of Wizarding Secrecy and the exchange rate offered by Gringotts and what he can do with his money. The Lovegood family, the Weasley family, and the Diggory family are the only ones we're exposed to. None of these demonstrate even an upper middle class lifestyle. Observer bias aside, the families are consistent in the economic traits they demonstrate. This tells me that most people's disposable income is low. Therefore, items for sale cannot be expensive because most people cannot buy expensive items.
See, I don't know about that, though, because like, how much do we see the Diggory family? We see them hang out with the Weasleys. I mean, like, that's not really a fair comparison. And again, like the Weasleys are living off of one salary for... At Sorcerer's Stone, you're sitting at
seven people
in the house on one salary. So like, yeah, of course their disposable income is going to be lower. Arthur's the only one who works.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yes, I know Molly works as a stay-at-home mom, but like he's the only one that gets the paycheck
income.
So like it makes sense that their disposable income is low. However, again, the Weasleys do have some disposable income. It's yeah. just not really highlighted all the time. They take a trip to Egypt before they win that money. So like they like Arthur and Molly already went to Egypt to visit Bill once. Then they took the family. They took the family with that extra money, mm-hmm. but they were able to go themselves. They go to Romania to visit Charlie over Christmas, and they're able to buy Percy an owl when he becomes prefect. They're able to buy
Ron
a broom, which let me tell you, based on some of the things I was looking up for how much brooms cost, that was way more than what Percy got for becoming prefect. Yes, Marcus.
Okay, so the reason why Arthur was able to afford a bunch of that stuff was because he won the Grand Prize Galleon Draw. It was in the Daily Prophet. Did he win like 1,000 galleons?
He did, and that was what they used to take the family to Egypt.
Right, but I think they also used that to like replace Ron's wand and do some other stuff.
Ron's wand. but they didn't use that money to buy him a broom. And like, obviously, I know the broom that he got isn't going to cost anywhere near as much as a firebolt, but it's still going to be a lot. And then like before they won that, they went to Egypt and they went to Romania. So like they do have some disposable income, basically, is just what I'm getting at. So like,
so when they talk about the, because he said he was staying at Hogwarts because they were traveling to visit Charlie, I kind of got the impression that it was just the parents traveling and both the parents can apparate. So maybe it's less expensive because the parents can apparate, which I don't know how far you can apparate. That's a whole nother conversation.
I do know that there's limitations and I do have some talking points on that, but like they could have also potentially like paid for a port key, which, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But still, I mean,
yeah,
they're still going someplace where, you know, they're probably going to have to like go out to eat a couple times. They're probably going to want to like, I mean, you know, like when my mom comes down to visit me, she wants to buy me groceries. She wants to like, you know, like do what she can for me, like while she's here. Like, I'm sure that Molly and Arthur wanted to do that for Charlie and for Bill, like whenever they went to go visit him, as much as they could, at least. So like, I don't know. I think that the Weasleys, yes, are quote poor, but like they truly do get by like okay. The fact that they're able to buy Ron a broom honestly is astounding.
It's poor by wizarding standards, but rich by muggle standards. Yeah. They're not rich, at least upper middle class. I mean, like their basic needs are met, and like, you know, their basic needs, they have no fear of those being an issue.
And like, imagine how much they had to drop for the Lockhart books, and they made it work on top of getting Ginny everything she needed for first year, which yes, she had to get something secondhand, but it was still a lot of stuff that she had to get. So they were able to get all of that plus all of the Lockhart books for all the kids that needed them. Like, it was a stretch, but they did it.
I assume that the books in the Wizarding World have some kind of like copyright prevention charms so that you can't just like duplicate a copy, because otherwise like it would just be infinitely available and like kids wouldn't have to buy books for school.
I guarantee you there's like charms or something. Buy books
for school.
Yeah like charms on them that prevent duplication, otherwise like how would an author make any money in that world, you know?
Right, exactly.
But like the twins could have shared a set, right? They're in all the same classes together.
Right. I don't think the professors wanted them to sit next to each other.
True. but they get by.
Yeah.
And they make it work.
Yeah. Let's see.
And that like Percy still needed those too. So again, that was 7 kids that needed sets of Lockhart books. That's insane.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like, when Bill was still in school, how many of the other kids were there too? Like, you know?
Like, how old is Bill? I would think that it was Bill, Charlie, Percy, and the twins, maybe. Maybe not the twins. Maybe it was just the three of them.
But, like, still, like, you're almost always having a lot of kids in school for a long time.
And then it was four and then jumped to five.
Yeah.
So many kids.
This person also speculates another reason that most people would be poor in the Wizarding World. There's something in my throat, sorry. Is because there's no mention of, like, magical farms. So witches and wizards would need, this was Meg was saying before, if that's true, then witches and wizards would have a need to have some sort of muggle currency for their daily needs. Also, Gringotts is the only place we know of that has any kind of currency exchange.
It's kind of like a monopoly, isn't it? The heck?
Yeah, I guess. And they are assuming that, like, they, like any bank, would offer a rate that favors them. So that means that you lose on your transaction. And then that further erodes your purchasing power with your wizard kind wage. Buying items the Wizarding World cannot supply for itself will quickly erode anyone's earnings, they say. And then, but this, though, is kind of, they kind of disprove themselves, and they say that, like, this explanation totally ignores, like, if they needed to have muggle currency and interact with muggles, then, like, why are they so ignorant of muggle things? That probably wouldn't be
something's
a thing.
Something's not adding up here.
Yeah, that was the point Meg made earlier about, like, if they go to a muggle grocery store to get the stuff that they don't grow themselves, like, they're having to use muggle money to do this. So, like, mm-hmm. they are interacting with muggles in those cases. But
yeah,
maybe they just eschew muggles so much that they're just like, you know what, we're just going to use magic and we're going to grow our own food.
Right.
I mean, well, that's, like, what it is.
And, like, if you think about how, and again, I think this was just a movieism, but, like, still, I mean, she signed off on everything, so, like, I think that some of the stuff has to be canon still. Like, they had Cheery Owls, which was very specifically a Wizarding World cereal, so, like, do they have some sort of grocery store that, like, it's just not talked about? Probably, because, like, that's not something Harry's gonna care about. He's a kid who just, like, goes to the Burrow and sits down and eats, you know? So, like, that's not something that's ever gonna be taught to us in these books until, you know, like, until he had been older. But
that does feel a little weird, because, like, the one thing that you see Harry suffer at the hands of the Dursleys is food scarcity. Like, he suffers that a lot, because they withhold food from him as, like, a punishment. So, like, a wizarding grocery store would have been, like, Harry would have gone nuts.
I would love to go to a wizarding grocery store.
I want to go to that now. Like, I want
put that at Universal. I'll buy some produce. What kind of weird produce you guys got?
Never know.
Is that where you get, like, dragon plums. Steaks? Yeah, dirigible plums.
Dirigible plums. The floating plums. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then you see Hagrid has dragon steaks and stuff. So, like, there's got to be some place that they can go to.
Yeah.
But would they allow Harry to, like, buy some dirigible plums and take them back to a muggle household? I don't know that they would.
I don't know.
Right, like, one, like, escapes and starts floating out the window.
What if he, like, feeds one to...
That would definitely break the statute of secrecy.
True. There's, like, a sign at the end of the market, no food beyond this point. If you eat it all there.
You have to apparate at home or...
Well, that's all I got right there, though, for my section just now.
You've got more sections coming.
I said for right now.
I actually
kind
of think this episode is going to be, like, a lot longer than I thought it was going to be, which is awesome, though. So, okay. So, travel. There are, like, so many different modes of travel in the Wizarding World, and, like, I feel like the price range on some of these is, it goes all the way from apparition, which is no cost to you, however, can be dangerous. You have to be skilled to do it.
The cost of free,
right?
Splint yourself. Don't pay anything in transportation.
But honestly,
yeah,
exactly. So it's like apparition is free, but there's a risk that goes along with it. You've got flu powder, which clearly we know Molly mentions to Arthur that they have to replenish it. So, like, there's a cost associated with flu powder. Also, something...
Flu power powder.
I can't remember who asked this in the chat, but somebody said Do you think that maybe there's like a cost associated with keeping your fireplace registered and like open? That could be interesting.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that because, you know, if you live in the UK, they have the, was that the ITV license? And if you try and use ITV, it tells you, it pops up and it says, did you pay for your license for your ITV? You're not supposed to be watching it if you didn't. So I kind of feel like that's a very British thing. Like people would pay for their like flu
network. And also maybe some people don't want to be connected. So that's like a way to be like, I don't want to be on the flu powder I'm network. Saving,
I mean, who was it? The Gaunts, you know, they didn't have a flu network connection. They didn't want people talking to them.
Is there like a flu network like phone book, like a flu book? Flip through it.
What would the wizard version of the Yellow Pages be?
It'd be like the purple
pages. Grandpa bringing up the real Yellow Pages.
Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about like the potential limitations with apparition as well. So like, yes, it is the no cost option. However, there is an age limit. You can only side along, I believe, with one person. So like, again, there's a limitation there, especially for like the Weasleys. Like they can't necessarily apparate everywhere they need to go to because they have so many kids who are underage who don't know how to do it. And it would work. I mean, I guess they could, you know, like have one of them be where they need to go and like just keep going back and forth. But I would assume that that's not comfortable. So it's probably easier for them to just do flu powder. So apparition does have a range limit and it becomes increasingly difficult with the distance to be traveled. It was advised that intercontinental apparition should only be attempted by the most highly skilled of wizards. Or witches. Why isn't witches on there?
Excuse God, me.
Sexist. Otherwise risking splinching, severe injury, and death. So again, like there's risk that goes along with apparition. It also requires a familiarity with the terrain of the place that the wizard or witch wants to visit, as they are needed to be able to visualize it clearly. Yes, Katie.
I'm thinking that like apparition for a lot of witches and wizards might be like how some people refuse to fly or some people refuse to drive on the highway.
Yeah.
It's but like worse be because I don't know. Apparition just seems really scary.
I agree with that because Arthur makes a comment. He's like, some wizards just don't bother with it. Like he says that. So yeah. Because I mean like, and Harry describes it like the first time he does it, like it's a pretty gnarly feeling when he apparates for the first time, you like getting squeezed through a tube. And I'm like,
gnarly.
Maybe you get motion sick and that's not for you.
True. He says that he would prefer flying any day over apparition, right. Even though it takes longer.
And that's Harry. That kid'll do anything, you know?
Right.
Right. Yeah,
he's fearless. So on the wiki, there is also a flu network. There is a flu network page and they have a little section on regulation and usage. So I wanted to see where they cited this information, but it doesn't look
Jacob like they... Sibling.
Dude, don't even get me started. I think that there was a Pottermore article. So it says the British network was governed by the Flu Network Authority, a section of the Department of Magical Transportation of the Ministry of Magic.
The FNA.
This department was located on level 6 of the ministry. The Flu Network Authority controlled which fireplaces were connected to the Flu Network, which required specialized magic. Traveling by way of the Flu Network could be done without specialized magic and could be preferable for wizards too young to apparate or those without access to other forms of transportation, such as broomsticks. Nearly every wizarding home had a fireplace that was connected to the flu network. While a fireplace could be disconnected by the use of a simple spell, connection required the approval of the Ministry of Magic, which regulated the flu network and prevented Muggle fireplaces becoming inadvertently joined up, although temporary connections could be arranged in emergencies, like we saw the Dursleys get connected for Arthur to come and get him for. That was Goblet of Fire, right?
Yeah.
In addition
to, that was Goblet of Fire.
In addition to domestic fireplaces, There were around 1,000 fireplaces across Britain connected to the flue network, including those at the Ministry of Magic and various wizarding shops and inns. The fireplaces of Hogwarts were not generally connected, although there were some occasions when one or more had been tampered with, often without the staff's knowledge. Harry Potter. In America, the flue network was regulated by MACUSA and appeared to be divided into regions, according to the New York Ghost, because there was a Southern flu network. So it was like regionally divided up for regulation. The South always wants their own way, don't they?
Yeah, that rhymes.
So that's interesting. So now that does kind of make me question, like, is there a cost, or can you just decide, no, I don't want to be connected? Is there some sort of like tax situation that like this is just a part of what you get from the government with taxes? Do the wizarding families pay taxes? I would assume that they have to a little bit.
Maybe. I mean, how does the Ministry of Magic function if they don't like take in some taxes? But yeah, that was something that like, it's never really mentioned in the book how taxes get collected. I'm assuming that like when you purchase things that there's some kind of sales tax.
Yeah.
You know, the UK has VAT tax, which is slightly more complex than sales tax. I don't really comprehend how that works because there's a little bit more involved to it. But I would assume that there's some kind of sales tax. So like if you go buy some dirigible plums at the Wizarding grocery store, you're going to pay 7%.
Definitely 7%.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Also, where's this from here? There is a flu powder writing on Wizarding World. So the author says flu came from the flu that you find on a chimney. And don't ask me to tell you exactly what a flu is because I don't know. I just know it exists, but I'm not sure what it does exactly. I needed a way for particularly young witches and wizards to travel around because I'd created the International Statute of Secrecy, which was inconvenient. So immediately that made it quite difficult for them to move around, particularly over long distances by magical means, meaning like it would be easy to spot a family of 7 flying through the sky on broomsticks across London.
The fam bus, yo. Right.
The fam bus.
That whole conversation with what was it, Bashir was trying to hunt down Arthur Weasley because they were trying to get him to say that it was okay for them to sell magic carpets for families.
Yeah, that's right. And there is an ad for Fambus broom at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Orlando.
Yep,
in Diagon Alley. So another mode of transportation that we know of is the port key, and I do know that like these need to be set up through the ministry. So I am assuming that there's a cost associated with a port key. However, it's a way, I would say that a port key has to be a more cost-effective way because you can have as many people as can touch that object travel at once. You know what I'm saying? Whereas flu powder, every person has to take a handful.
Yeah.
So I wonder...
Yeah.
I just need the very tip of your pinky on this object.
Yeah, but I guess making a port key could be more inconvenient than using a fireplace because that's easy. It's just in your home and you're like, okay, I'm going to take a handful and go. Whereas this is like more setup is required, which is like why they do it for the Quidditch World Cup. Because like they have a whole group that's going and they set up a time and like have that.
Yeah, so people have to have a schedule. They have to have the object. They have to have already turned it into a port key. They have to operate to a location, drop it off, make sure the wizards that are coming know the location it's going to be.
Yeah, there's like a lot of logistics.
That's a lot of setup. Yeah.
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 So yeah, I mean, like we don't necessarily know like what the cost associated could be, but like I'm assuming that there is some sort of cost associated with getting them set up through the ministry, because there are unauthorized port keys as well. It says that according to Remus Lupin, the creation of unauthorized port keys would incur some sort of punishment, and Cornelius Fudge was furious when Dumbledore created one in front of him without permission.
That was
so
my
that
favorite
has
part
to be regulated. Yeah.
You can't just do things like that in front of the minister.
Why
I'm
not?
Dumbledore, I can.
Of course he can. Yeah. We also have brooms, but as we know, like, brooms are expensive. So for like a family, again, to have something like that, that would be very costly. We do know, again, that the Weasleys have, I mean, they're older brooms, but like they have brooms for like a lot of the kids to like practice play Quidditch and stuff in the backyard. So
yeah.
Cause like, I'm assuming a broom is more expensive than like a bike, which is something that a muggle kid would have, but like, right, witches and wizards get brooms. True. You know, I mean, thinking of the Firebolt is what, like, estimated to be like maybe 800 galleons or something. That's insane.
And if you remember, Sirius got Harry, like, I guess what would be the tricycle version of a broom, because he was flying around on it.
Yeah.
And like, yes, he crashed into something. I forget. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and then like two other options that we have, like the night bus. We know that that does have a cost because Stan charges, and there's different options for amenities depending on what you want for the night bus. And then the Hogwarts Express, which is no cost, but only takes you to Hogwarts if you're a student or a teacher, aka Remus Lupin takes it. But yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. The night bus has a charge, but then Hogwarts Express is free, which is weird because then witches and wizards still all have to apparate or travel somehow to get to the location for them to take the train. Yeah.
And like, what if you live in Scotland? You have to get down to platform 9 3/4 to go up to Scotland.
Yeah.
What if you live in Hogsmeade? What if you live in Hogsmeade? You could literally walk down the street to Hogwarts, but
I
no,
wonder you if
have
you
to
can.
To... Yeah, like, is there exceptions?
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, I just want to say I would travel everywhere if I could apparate, let me tell you. Even if there was a chance of flinching.
If I was the kid and I lived in Hogsmeade and you were like, well, you can just walk down to the gates and they'll let you in. If my parents told me that, instead of like having to take me to be on the train, I'd be like, no, like, I want to ride the train with my friends.
Right.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
All right, talk to me about Gamp's Law. Gampa.
Oh, snap. This is my part. Gampa. Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, so all right, so I'm just gonna say what we know about Gamp's Law, and it's the quote that Hermione gives when she's talking about what basically happened is that Ron is hangry and Hermione is like laying down the law quite literally. So she says, your mother can't just produce food out of thin air. No one can. Food is the first of the five principal exceptions to Gamp's Law of Elemental Transfiguration. It's impossible to make good food out of nothing. You can summon it if you know where it is. You can transform it. You can increase the quantity of it if you've already got some. So that's like the first.
Oh, well, that's right? A big thing.
Right?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so if you have a box of Cheerios, you can theoretically infinitely increase. Yes, Cherry Owl, excuse
Wait,
me.
Yes, thank you. Can I have a question?
Infinitely. Go for
I have
it.
A question. Okay. That's great. Because, like, say you buy a loaf of bread, sweet, like, we got bread forever. But, well, for bread too, say there is a perishable item. Does, if you duplicate that item, does it all have the same expiration date?
Oh, interesting.
See, I would say yes. So if you have a loaf of fresh bread, you can increase that. But if you have a loaf of moldy bread, you don't want to increase right,
and it's not like you could even be like, well, I'm gonna wait till I get down to the last duplicate bread and then duplicate more, because then that one would be older,
right?
So you would eventually have to buy like fresh food and duplicate.
Okay, you know what I'm gonna do? You know what I'm gonna do? I'm going to duplicate frozen loaves of bread.
But okay, so think about it from the Weasley's perspective. Like, theoretically,
awesome.
Molly could make one corned beef sandwich and say, Gemino, Gemino, Gemino. And then she's got, like, you know, however many she needs to feed the family.
That's
so
amazing.
Is she making seven sandwiches, or is she making one sandwich and then just duplicating it?
That's well,
according
sure,
to
that's
Ron in Sorcerer's Stone, she's making seven because his is sloppily put together and she forgets that he doesn't like corned beef.
Yeah.
Or roast beef.
Right, because and if she's just duplicating them, she's just
this
making them all the same.
Yeah,
I bet you, so he's not getting one special for him. Yeah.
I want a PB&J.
Or Wonwon.
Poor Wanwan.
Yeah, and then also like being able to summon food if you know where it is. Okay, so you mean to tell me if I go and park outside Outback, I can summon a steak to myself because I know there's steak in there.
Okay, so I thought about it
on the highway.
So like, in Hogwarts, in the Great Hall, we know that the kitchens are actually below the Great Hall and they like mirror the Great Hall. And so like whenever like the food just appears on the table in front of them, it's essentially it's being summoned from the floor below.
True.
Like they place all the food on the tables and then it just appears on the table in front of them. So that was one of the things that I thought about, like the summoning part of it. Like if you know where it is, you could summon it. And I mean, I'm assuming like if you know where food is, you could just say Asio, you know, French toast and it would fly out of IHOP.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you live in Hogsmeade and you know that there's butterbeer. Right.
You're also a thief and you're breaking the Wizarding Statute of Secrecy. So those are problematic actions. Asio Mexican pizza.
Oh, that's great.
Oh my God. That's so interesting. That's so interesting. This honestly adds to like what I was saying before, how like wizarding salaries are worth so much more than muggle salaries, even if they match the same, even if they make the same amount, exactly. It's much more in the wizarding world.
Right, exactly.
But then in turn, that makes me think, because if you think about like in America, the cost of living is different in different areas, right? So like you're gonna get paid less to do the same job an easier example is like you'll get paid more to do the same job in like New York City or Los Angeles than like someplace in the Midwest, because the cost of living is higher in those places. So do ministry workers make less than government workers do in the UK, you know what I'm saying, to like balance it out? But like I don't think so.
McKenna just said, is wizarding DoorDash or Uber Eats called Akio Eats?
Oh my God, I love that.
That's amazing.
I love that. I am now questioning my pronunciation on everything because I know Jim Dale says Osseo, and I have always said that, like, I always use his pronunciations, and now I'm like, why do I say Akio when Jim Dale said Osseo?
I don't know, because you're a weird kid.
Do they say Akio in the movies?
Yeah, they do.
I don't remember.
Hmm.
I'm a books are better kid, so.
Ooh, I like both. I say nut, but I know that Jim Dale says knut.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, it's not spelled with like an apostrophe, so I don't know, or is it? I don't think it is.
It's
so
not.
I don't know why he pronounced it that way. So, and that's my thing. Like, why didn't somebody like be like, hey, we need you to re-record this like section? But anyway. Okay, so one of the other, we talked about Camp Slaw, but one of the other things I wanted to talk about is like, so we kind of talked about the house elves already. So they're the cooks for Hogwarts. The only other times that we really see people that actually prepare or make food in the wizarding world is Molly. And then maybe, I guess you could say a little bit with Rosmerta, because we know she's famous for making her oak matured mead.
That sounds really good.
The other time that we see Gampslaw brought up is when Neville points out that that's the one thing that the Room of Requirement can't provide them is food. And so it opened a passage to the Hogshead, and Aberforth was able to supply them with food. So that's another instance where you kind of see that law in action. And I think it's kind of hilarious because like Ron is the one that's like, well, if that's the first exception to Gamp's law, he like parrots what Hermione says. And it makes him sound really smart, and it's kind of funny. And then, the other time is that Sirius was living in a cave eating rats during the Goblet of Fire. Do y'all remember that? And like,
yeah.
The trio go and get chicken and like different things from the kitchen from Dobby and the other house elves there to take to Sirius in the cave that he was staying in. So I know we're going to talk about this later on, but like we talk, one of the things that like is another aspect of like wizarding economy is like housing. And it's like, okay, so we already know in Goblet of Fire, earlier in the Goblet of Fire, they went to the Wizarding, the Quidditch World Cup, and they threw up a tent that was he had borrowed from an old warlock named Perkins. And you walk inside the tent, and it's basically an apartment flat with running water and a bathroom. So yeah. Why is Sirius living in a cave? Why doesn't he have like a pup tent that's like a flat?
Right?
Like, right? Make it make sense.
With running
make it
water make sense. And...
With running water. And then also, if he could get like any food whatsoever, he could theoretically should be able to increase the quantity of it. So he shouldn't have to be eating rats.
Right. If you're hanging around in Hogsmeade like, too.
Didn't Harry send him bread? Or something?
He brought him chicken.
Like, yeah. Like, why didn't he, before he ate that, make more?
Duplicate it. Right.
Yeah.
What exactly. A dummy.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah,
dumb.
Increase the quantity.
You are really dumb. For real.
He's like, no, I enjoy the rats.
I've never, yeah, right. That's the bottom line. He actually enjoyed eating the rats because he thought of
maybe
Peter
that was like a,
with everybody.
I was just gonna say it was a dig at Peter.
Oh no, that's terrible.
So awful.
That's bad.
Okay, I think that's all I've got for Gamp's Law.
Little side note on Gamp's Law, that's the terrible fake Hermione voice on the Hogwarts Express at the Wizarding World of Harry
You're
Potter
right.
And Universal Orlando. It's awful. It's awful.
That is one of the first of the five principal exceptions to Gamp's Law of Elemental Transfiguration.
I've been on there like...
Oh my gosh. That's her customer service voice? Mm-hmm.
It's worse than that. Like, a customer service voice is better than that.
They couldn't get Emma Watson, and whoever they got was just... Not it.
No comparison. Like it. Not it. Not even like. Oh, it kind of sounds. No. Not at all. Anyway, get off my high horse there. So this part took my brain in places I didn't know it could go. I didn't know there were these many questions about healthcare in the Wizarding World. So basically, according to the author. And I'll get into a little bit more of what she's written. Anything that's a muggle ailment, generally, wizards can easily cure. I'm going to preface this section as a trigger warning, talking about different medical ailments, just so everyone knows. So the first article I pulled stuff from was from Reddit, from user Elpheus Mostafa, which I feel like we may have actually read something from that before. It sounds very familiar to me. I don't know.
Maybe when we talked about...
talk about mungos or something? I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
So they posed all these wonderful questions, and I'm just gonna dish them out and we're gonna talk about it. How does a very sick or injured witch or wizard get to the hospital? Meaning, like, okay, yes, you can rely on your family and friends, but what do you do if you're alone? How do you call for emergency? Can
Is there
you
an ambu broom?
Ambu broom?
I don't know.
Like, could a Patronus be sent? But side note, I feel like a Patronus is really some, isn't that like Dumbledore invented that method of using a Patronus? And it was kind of like, yeah, so he taught the order. So yes. I don't think it's widely known, but if it is widely known, casting a Patronus does require energy. And if you're really sick or you're really injured, chances are you're probably not going to be able to conjure that well. Like, are there small clinics around the United Kingdom? Is there a response team like EMT or EMS? Is there a Wizarding World 911?
Like, there has right? to be so little like, clinics that are like,
yeah, in America, there, I call them a doc in a box.
Oh my god, yeah. Is there a m'ladies and a m'lords clinic? You know,
yeah,
so a
Man,
healer in a hut,
think about
healer in a hut, shut up.
Oh my god.
Weenie Hot General.
That's SpongeBob.
Yeah. It was.
Any anytime she makes a joke and I don't know what it is,
it's generally
SpongeBob. 9.5 times out of 10 it's SpongeBob.
Yeah, there's just so many things you need to learn by still watching the show. I'm gonna say that we need to watch one episode of SpongeBob before we do Grey's every night.
What?
Yeah, because then you'll learn all these wonderful jokes I have. They're funny. Anyway.
They're funny.
Does the Wizarding World have a need for any sort of Muggle medical treatments? We do see Mr. Weasley like try to dapple in stitches. It doesn't go well because like the magical properties totally dissolve them and it's bad news. But I wonder if like at any point in time do they require any sort of Muggle treatment? And then this is more of the trigger part. Do human witches and wizards ever get or pass away from cancer, heart attacks? Is there diabetes? Is there heart disease? Strokes? High blood pressure?
I feel like this is touched on a little bit. And the author says that it does happen way less often because they can fix so many ailments with magic, which then this becomes a morality issue, in my opinion, because like they have the cure for all of these things and they're not sharing it.
Yeah.
I mean, like they get a cold at Hogwarts and they just go get a pepper up potion and then like the next day you're fine. That day you're fine instantly. You smoke at the ears for a day, but other than that, you're totally good.
But like to be able to like cure heart disease.
Cure cancer?
So there is an article on wizardingworld.com. It's called Illness and Disability. It is written by the author. It's like one of those excerpts from her. I'm just gonna bring some stuff from it. Basically she's saying like she even wondered like, do wizards catch colds? Can they cure illnesses that baffle muggles, blah blah blah. So she ultimately decided, broadly speaking, that wizards could have the power to correct or override, quote, mundane nature, but not magical nature. So basically, like, a wizard could catch anything a muggle might catch, but he could cure all of it. So but this is where it gets interesting to me. He could comfortably survive a scorpion sting that might kill a muggle, but he might die being bitten by a venomous tentacula, because that's what they encounter more. And like there is a little bit of a different blood chemistry, I believe, between magical and non-magical. Let's see what else was in here. I'm just going to read this part too. Thus, it can be seen that while wizards have an enviable head start over the rest of us in dealing with the flu and all manner of serious injuries, they have to deal with problems that the rest of us never face. Not only is the Muggle world free of such perils as devil's snare and blast-ended scroots, the statute of secrecy has also kept us free from contact with anyone who could pass on dragonpox or spattergroit. So that's what made me think like, okay, so all that being said,
we have our issues and they have their issues.
Yes. But like, does that mean like, sure, the wizarding community doesn't get cancer or suffer from heart attacks, but do they have similar magical afflictions to that? Like dragonpox sounded like it was really bad. Spattergroit, like
a lot of people out.
Spattergroit doesn't sound pleasant. So like, is there, for lack of a better term, like is there like magical cancer in a way, but it would be called something. But I just wonder if like, well, they do deal with it in some form.
I remember Dumbledore, when he graduated, like in his novel that was written by Rita, like, or his novel, his biography, he was supposed to do a tour of the world when he graduated from Hogwarts, and Elpheus Doge was supposed to come with him, but Elpheus Doge came down with dragonpox, didn't he? Isn't that what he came down with? And then he couldn't travel. And so like, I kind of was under the impression that it was like a very debilitating disease. And then Slughorn makes a comment to Malfoy about his father, or grandfather rather, that he knew Malfoy's grandfather really well, and then he was like, oh, dragonpox at his age, you know, and apparently that's what he passed away from. And I think if I remember correctly, maybe even like the Potters, like Harry's grandparents might have passed away from dragonpox. So dragonpox is apparently a very gnarly disease to get in the wizarding world,
right? And I wonder if like, I mean, in the article I just read, the author kind of says like the ministry helped, like, stopped anyone from a muggle from contracting dragonpox, but I wonder if there's types of illnesses that they can't contract because they're not
right magical. Because they don't have because they don't have any, like, I don't know, what do you call it, midichlorians, that's what they call it in Star Wars.
Yeah.
I love the crossover. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Also, someone in the
chat, Brunil Waslib, corrected me in the chat. So she said Doge was recovering from dragonpox when school started, and that's how him and Dumbledore became friends, because Dumbledore befriended him. And the reason why he couldn't travel was because, oh, so that's what happened. Yeah. Dumbledore's mother passed away, and Elpheus is actually the one that ended up going traveling. That's what happened.
Got it. Lily E asked too, if a muggle gets a magical illness, is it a death sentence? I don't know. I do know that, like, certain things affect muggles more. So, like, if it is contractable,
like,
for example, like, I'm sure dragonpox would be way more dangerous even still for a muggle.
So we know one magical being that impacts muggles, and that's Dementors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, because they were saying that, like, Dementors were making all of the, like, UK citizens depressed and sad and miserable during Voldemort's rise to power.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, I'm just going to leave you guys with all that. You can just contemplate all these wonderful things. And someone in the chat also asked, like, do they have universal healthcare? I don't know.
Is there magical health insurance? Oh, yeah. So, like, when Arthur got bitten by Nagini, like, did he get a massive bill from Healer Smethwick? That was like, he got multiple bills, one from Smethwick, one from St. Mungo's. Right. Sorry. I'm talking about the American healthcare system, for those of you who are not familiar. You get like 28 bills from all the different providers that gave you a service.
And did you know that you can call them and negotiate price your price?
Oh, 100%.
That's ridiculous. It should just be covered, whatever.
I mean, the UK has socialized medicine, so I'm going to assume that the Wizarding World does too.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
That I would think so too. Yeah. I feel like they kind of mirror the Muggle ministry for as much as
they do
eschew Muggle way of doing things.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about housing. And I don't, like, I didn't really, this is really just going to be a discussion, because this is something we literally know absolutely nothing about. Like, there was no research to do on this topic.
I'm a magical real estate agent. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. You are?
Right? Yeah.
Oh,
well, seriously.
Katie, do you want to talk about it?
No, I want to hear what you think.
Oh, okay. So Marcus's thoughts here. By the way, guys, Marcus literally gave me all the talking points. Like, he's bomb.
Yeah.
So this was his idea for discussing housing.
This was his baby.
This would be potentially their biggest cost of living, would be like accommodations, whether that's the home that they live in or if they like rent an apartment. But even then, couldn't you just rent like a broom closet or a shed and then magically extend the space, which, mind you, is kind of what the Burrow looks like, what happened, you know?
Exactly.
It's very wonky.
Harry says it was held together by magic.
Yeah.
Right.
So that they could extend the space to be double, triple, or substantially larger. I will say, I think that proof of that being a thing is the Burrow. It definitely is just like pieced together. It's almost like as they had kids, they added a level, you know, like with another bedroom. And Katie and I have like written this very long fan fiction-y type role play story that takes place in the Wizarding World. And we had our characters do that. They like extended their home themselves with magic. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that makes sense. So like, yeah, again, it's a cost to like initially, basically they just have to buy land.
Yeah.
I think that like,
yeah.
Yeah, like the Weasleys just had to buy that land, and then they just like built what they wanted on it.
Yeah, because we know the Weasleys on that land, the Diggorys aren't far away, and then the Lovegoods are nearby as well. So like a lot of that area. So I'm seriously thinking that like Katie's not far from the truth when she's like, there's a magical real estate agent out there.
Probably.
Probably. They just sell plots of land.
Where did Harry's parents live? Godric Hollow. And it was a mixture of Muggle and wizarding households. So, like, can you imagine if you're a Muggle and you're like, oh, I'm really interested in that house. And they're like, no, you can't buy that house.
No. That's there's a ghoul in the attic. Right?
Yeah, there's a ghoul in the attic. You're not allowed to buy that house.
I don't know. I mean, like, there's not, like, a whole lot to talk about there. But, like, besides, I agree that, like, all they need to do is get land, and then they and, like, I kind of think that, like, the Lovegoods house is another example like that. I feel like their house also, at least how they visually made it look in the films, it looked magically built. Delicious. It was wonky, it had charm and character. Like, I feel like that's a thing.
So my biggest thing right now is, like, in America, the tiny house movement has, like, taken a huge foothold because people are, like, desperate for affordable housing.
Yeah.
I feel like it had a big rise, like, probably 10 years ago. My, like, entire YouTube feed for, like, probably a good 2 years was tiny houses because I was obsessed.
I'm obsessed.
Meg was like, we could do it. I was like, no.
I wish we could. Maybe then, let's sell everything. We could do it. I'm on this.
And then
again,
you go to the Goblet of Fire, to the Quidditch World Cup, and everybody puts up these tents. And what are these tents if not, like, magical tiny houses? And I'm
right?
We could literally live in a tiny house community with a bunch of wizard tents that are basically full-blown apartments on the inside.
Mm-hmm. I would love that.
I mean, the trio literally spent an entire year traveling the globe. Not the globe, but, you know.
Traveling the UK.
Great Britain. Traveling the UK. In a tent that was basically like a small apartment. Like, come on, that's, yeah. You know, to me, that's one of those things that, like, huge, huge equalizer.
If Voldemort was smart, he would have hid his Horcruxes all around the world and not just in the UK. What a dummy.
True.
He should have hid that, like, one at each wizarding school. It gotta be enough, right?
I think so.
Oh my gosh. And he also should not have made them, like, important,
yeah,
like, magical objects. He should have made them an old tin can and just thrown it in the trash.
Literally make it, like, a sewing needle.
Flick it if he had just done that He's with extra. One of them.
Yeah, just
if
one.
He had just done that with one and let it go to a landfill, it would never have been seen again.
Thumbtack done.
And he would have been fine.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my
How
gosh,
small
Jenny.
Can a Horcrux be? That's a whole nother conversation.
Jenny just said that this conversation makes her think of the show Out of the Box. I loved
out
that
of the
show.
Box. Out of
Marcus,
the box.
You're probably too old for that.
Market.
Yeah, Katie sang the theme song.
Mm-hmm. Out of the box. Yeah. Out so out long. Farewell to you, my friend. So good. I wanted to be in that fort.
Yeah, honestly. It was like you went into this box and then, like, it was literally the tent from the Quidditch World Cup.
Yeah. Oh my god. Another core memory unlocked. Oh.
Oh man, I loved Out of the Box.
That same time was also like Gullah Island.
Gullah Island.
Gullah. Anyway.
Okay, so the next
Marcus
thing we wanted
like,
to talk about.
Gullah.
I don't get that reference. Not much generation. I'm sorry. So the next thing we wanted to talk about was Harry's management of his own gold. And apparently I did not paste my notes for that.
AKA there is no management. There's no management done.
So basically, and I feel like we don't begrudge Harry this because he spent so long with the Dursleys and we saw how he was treated with the Dursleys. So it was kind of like in a way that I don't want to say that we like that he was one of us, but we kind of like, we don't begrudge him coming into a lot of money, but effectively Harry was a trust fund baby and he inherited a very large sum of money. And I pulled one source. This was from 17.com. They wrote an article about it and they did a calculation and they said that Harry effectively inherited the amount of what is $1.2 million. So at the age of 11 years old, Harry was a millionaire.
Sick.
That's, right?
I mean, I think it's probably a good thing he didn't like comprehend how much that was, maybe, because that kid was just like, omnoculars, yeah, 3 sets, hook me up. You know, but it's also kind of cool that he had like a little bit of freedom to like go and get some random jokes
because he lived in literal heck for the first 10 years of his life, pretty much.
If anyone deserves a random $1 million check, it's Harry.
Right.
Jenny says technically at the age of 1, he was a millionaire because his parents.
Ouch.
No, Jenny, that's so dark. I didn't not think about it that way. Not wrong.
I mean, honestly, at age 1, James was probably a millionaire because this was money left over from a potion invention, right? Yeah. Like,
right. Yeah. So I actually researched that, and it was the Sleakeasy's hair potion that Fleamont
created. Hermione uses.
Yep.
Yeah, that Hermione uses later on. And she was like, I had to use a ton of that stuff. So, you know, maybe make that a little bit more potent, Fleamont. But,
accurate.
That was how he was like, I'm going to make money because I'm going to water this stuff down. But anyway, so that was basically, well, we know that like Harry is descended from the Peverells, who were apparently like really great wizards. And so we have reason to believe that maybe that like they have generational wealth, and that's where some of it came from. And then we know that specifically like Fleamont was also an entrepreneur and like developed this potion and had a successful line of potions that he sold. So we think that's where the source of the income was. But the thing that I really wanted to look at was the fact that, like, you know, Hagrid was sent to get Harry because Harry wasn't getting his letters. And so because of that, then Hagrid accompanies Harry to go to Diagon Alley to buy this stuff. And so he follows him around while he's making purchases. And there was a point in Diagon Alley when Harry's looking at cauldrons and he's like, I want the pure gold cauldron.
Oh, yeah.
Harry was trying to go full baller.
And full Hagrid trust was fund like,
right? Exactly. And Hagrid was like, no, your list says pewter.
Good job, Hagrid. So good job. Money,
right? So we do see like Harry have like this tendency in the beginning to just like want to spend money. Now that he has some, because, you know, he's never really had money before. The other time that we see Harry spend money is when he's on the, like, train for Hogwarts, and the trolley comes by, and he's like, I'll take the lot, and he literally just buys all the candy off the trolley for him and Ron to go through, and they had a blast doing that, which feels very Harry, because, like we said, one of the things that Harry had encountered was food scarcity. Like, that was one of the things that, like, he really experienced living with the Dursleys, because they withheld food and all that kind of stuff. So if you have money now and you've experienced food scarcity, you're just going to be like, give me all the foods, which is a Hufflepuff. I respect, mad respect.
Oh, for sure.
So I just want to like preface this by saying, like, after that year where Hagrid accompanies him, like, from that point forward, he's literally just like a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old walking around with $1 million in the bank, and nobody is like nobody's acting as the trustee for this. Nobody's telling him what he can spend the money on. Like
how can he invest, like, that to get more?
There's no, right? Like,
is
you'll
that
get this
American thing.
Nobody's managing this. Nobody's like telling him how much he's allowed to spend at the start of each school year, like giving him an like a budgeted amount or anything like that. It's basically like all on him.
There you go.
Right, exactly. And then, like, does he know how many galleons to get out at the beginning of every year? Like, he doesn't know what his course books are going to cost or the ingredients he's going to need for potions are going to cost. He's not like making that budget. Molly's probably doing that for her family, but nobody's doing that him. So he's just like grabbing a big old pile of gold and throwing it in a bag and like running.
I never thought of this before, but it's like, usually like an inheritance like that would, you'd have to wait until you were of age, but they're just like,
right
here you go, jump in this pool of gold.
Or there's somebody there to be like, okay, here's how much you have.
Right. Like, or, yeah. You
know, right. Like what Marcus exactly.
Saying. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, you know, his parents aren't here. So like, here's what you need for the school year. Come back right, this time exactly. Next year and you'll get more.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So what actually brought all this about and what made me want to talk about this as a topic of conversation is like, I re-listened to the Harry Potter books over and over again. And so I was listening to Chamber of Secrets, and there was like, it's funny to me because like the contradictions that are made in the books, like just from one chapter to the next, are kind of amusing sometimes. So in Chamber of Secrets is when we meet the Grangers for the first time. So Arthur meets the Grangers and he's like, Muggles, they're exchanging money, Muggle money for galleons. Okay. So he's like freaking out because he sees them exchanging Muggle money for galleons at Gringotts. And he just thinks it's the neatest thing ever. So we actually see that you can exchange money, you know, Muggle money for wizard gold. Like, it's a thing you can do. So we know it's the thing you can do. And then a couple of chapters later, when they can't get on the Hogwarts Express, Ron asks Harry if he has any Muggle money so that they could like take a taxi or do something. I forget exactly. And Harry's like, the Dursleys haven't given me pocket money for 6 years. What are you talking about? And I'm like, did it never occur to you, Harry, to like maybe take a couple of galleons and go get some Muggle money?
That's true.
Like, you could have easily walked up to any one of the goblin tellers and been like, hey, can you give me Muggle money for these 3 galleons?
Harry's literally
and then
like,
he would have had pocket money.
Right. He's literally like,
maybe he was
peace,
worried.
Muggle world. I'm out of here. You know,
maybe he was like worried that they would take it from him, though.
So there is one comment where he says, it's in the very first book, that he says that if they knew that he had this, they would have had it off of him like
in a
minute. So
yeah.
So if he had ever actually converted to Muggle money and they had found out that he was like smuggling Muggle money home and like using it to buy stuff, and they had found out, they would have been like, where are you getting this money from?
Yeah.
Like, do you know how expensive you are to take care of? So yeah, I do agree with that. That was the one argument that I'll give Harry in his favor. But like, also, as he got a little bit older, I feel like you could have taken 40 pounds home and nobody would have known.
Right.
And bought some chips.
Yeah. Right. True. You can figure it out.
You could have smuggled some chips home. Yeah. Like, there's some stuff you could have done. You're friends with the Weasley twins. Come on, figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, they can help you out.
Okay, so that was like the big points I wanted to talk about, was just that, like, you know, you have an 11-year-old with $1 million and very little oversight.
No oversight, none, except Hagrid saying, none. Nah, maybe don't get the gold.
No gold coffins, yeah.
I will say, though, Harry, first of all, like, he should never have turned out the way that he did. It's a good thing he did. But, like, I think he also mentions in Sorcerer's Stone when he's shopping, like, he wanted to buy like this thing that showed you like the whole solar system.
Yeah.
And he refrained from that. Like, he does have this level of self-control. Yeah, and I'm impressed by it. I know, me too.
Yeah.
I'm impressed by it. Even like he knows when he's splurging a little bit, like when he buys those binoculars at the Quidditch World Cup. But he also like knows how to hold himself back sometimes. I don't know. I need to take a leaf out of Harry's book for sure.
Right.
Okay, are you done? I don't want to talk over you.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So let's go over some pricing of magical items and stuff like that, which I forgot that this was part of my section, and my two lovely co-hosts here helped me. I wanted to give you guys credit. That was really nice. So we can start with a firebolt, because I think that may possibly be, like, before I go through this, we're going to go through this list of like random things, but before that, I feel like the firebolt is like, that's one thing when someone's like, how much does that cost? Because I think in the book it even says like, ask for price, and that's never a good sign when you're shopping for anything at all. So this one person guesses between 600 and 800 galleons. This other link guesses, I think it's, oh look, it's Cora, guesses like 2,000 galleons.
That's crazy.
That's a lot.
No, I don't think that's right. I would guess like 500 to 800.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Whew. I feel like 600 is a good good range for that. Yeah.
What does this wiki list say? Because the wiki list.
So the wiki list says the Firebolt's 300, but I think that's incorrect.
300 galleons. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like enough to make it to make it out of reach.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, how much is a Nimbus 2000?
There's literally, I tried to find it. There's nothing. There's no price. Because
didn't McGonagall buy him the Nimbus? So like, how much did she throw down on a student? In her
house? I mean, I felt like the Nimbus series was maybe like 100 galleons. Which
I agree. Yeah.
If we go, so this list, it's on the wiki. It has like cost of items and books, and it starts with the most. So the number one like largest unit that we see is the bounty on Sirius's head.
And Harry's.
It's the same. You're right. Mm-hmm. Harry and Sirius. That's funny. Oh, we have so much in common. And it's 10,000 galleons. Holy.
Wow.
Holy moly.
Hold on. What's the conversion? Okay, hold on.
You've got like the conversion that we are using, right?
While y'all are doing that conversion, so the article that I read said that they think that Harry had about 50,000 galleons in his vault based on their estimate.
Okay. I think the conversion we're using is on the lexicon, right?
This doesn't seem right then. 10,000, it says $60,000 ish. 60,600.
That's a lot of money.
That doesn't add up.
Yeah.
But also, like, wizards are weird. Like, okay, if your increments are like, and I'm going to just say this wrong, but it's like,
I don't know. I trust that. Lexicon.
But if your increments are like 27 sickles to a galleon and whatever to a nut, like how then are you just like, well, it's a 10,000 galleon prize? Why wouldn't it be like some weird number? There's no way that those are going to go in nicely to 10,000. I don't know. Are you trying to figure that out?
I mean, I don't know. Their converter seems the best. It says that this converter is accurate to the hour based on exchange rates.
Wow.
And you can even set historical dates so that you can work out how much something is on a certain like day in a year.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that, like time value of money, because like I'm wondering if some people are giving us the quote of what a galleon was worth back in 1994 when Harry was like theoretically going through school.
It says, for the sake of this converter, 1 galleon equals 5 pounds, as described by the author when asked for a currency conversion.
Okay.
So we assume that the exchange rate between galleons and pounds is static. For the sake of this converter. Okay.
All right. I mean, well, if that's what was said, that's probably the most canon we can get, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The third largest sum, and I don't know if I'll go through all of these, but it's just kind of interesting to see like the big ones, is the Triwizard Winnings. That was 1,000 galleons. I mean, that was enough for Fred and George to like really push to open their joke shop, because Harry obviously gives it to them. Then we have a reward for an Azkaban escapee other than Sirius. And that's also 1,000 galleons. We have that newspaper prize for the Weasley family. That was 700 galleons. According to this, Firebolt 300. Acromantula venom, 100 galleons for a pint. For a pint, that's a lot. But I like, they're a big spider, so I wonder how much you can get.
Yeah, like, is that like in one go?
Milking.
You said a pint and my brain went immediately to ice cream, so you can tell where my brain is right now.
Oh, ice cream.
I want a pint of a root beer float. Oh, I've been craving
Honey
a
Hut
root beer
needs
float.
To come up. Honey Hut needs to come up with a Harry Potter flavor, like Acromantula Venom.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to get Honey Hut. Like a week.
Every day.
A
man.
Week till Honey Every Hut day. Fell. Don't lick the microphone. No, thank you.
Then we drop down, like we're not all in the hundreds anymore. When Mr. Weasley was fined for his flying car, that was 50 galleons. I mean, it's still pretty steep, but the monthly offer that Dobby gives to, or Dumbledore gives to Dobby, his monthly offer is 40 galleons. That's awesome. Dobby does not take that because he feels like it's too much.
I remember this.
Yeah. But I did not like remember that it was, that's
so what
good.
Is that yearly? What's 40 times 12?
40 times
12. I can't do that math in my head. I could, but
me
I don't want
either.
To.
40 times 12. 480. I mean, it's not a lot, but like to Dobby, that had to have felt like a million galleons, you know?
Totally.
Let's see. What else should we pull from here? Fred and George, their bet on the Quidditch World Cup was rounded up like 38 galleons. And then we've got things like a stolen venomous tentacula leaf or seed, 10 galleons to the right buyer. Omnoculars are 10 galleons. Harry just, give me three of them. No big deal. Oh, Percy's betting on his girlfriend, 10 galleons. Bro, you don't have that, but I appreciate you trying to look cool in front of Penelope.
Hey, if Fred and George had 30 something, he might.
That was like their life savings.
I know.
Percy literally. Even said, he was like, I don't have 10 galleons, so you have to win. He tells Harry that.
That's right. Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't bet on his girlfriend. It was a bet against his girlfriend. That's right. Thank you.
For on Harry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unicorn hairs are 10 galleons per hair. You know, that's interesting. I read this somewhere. I don't remember where I was looking, but like, I think a wand, hold on, a wand is 7 galleons, but a core item is more than that. So does like Ollivander go and like get the materials he needs himself to cut down on like middleman cost?
Probably.
Does he go and does he have a deal with Hagrid and he gets some unicorn hairs?
Oh. So I will say he does have a line in there about where he got Cedric Diggory's unicorn hair. He got it from a young unicorn that almost gored him when he tried to pull the hair.
Well, there you go.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
This is what my brain is full of, random Harry Potter knowledge.
I mean,
me too.
That's a beautiful thing. Let's see. The advanced potion making book is 9 galleons. Jeez, that's more than a wand.
That's crazy.
Jeez. The price for catching a mudblood, 5 galleons per person. That's gross. Then we've got,
also it's not very much, like it doesn't seem like it would encourage you to catch them.
Yeah,
right, that is weird.
Right. You can buy 2 coffees plus the tip at Madame Puttyfoot's for 1 galleon. Dragon liver is 17 sickles. We're down to the sickles now. A canary cream is 7 sickles. Sorry, I was getting a random call that I didn't expect. The cost of hot chocolate on the night bus, 2 sickles. I'd pay for that. But if you also want a hot water bottle and toothbrush, that's another 2 sickles, which is the same price to join SPEW. Sorry, SPEW. Yep, 2 sickles. A bottle of butterbeer is also 2 sickles. And then the only items we know for nuts or canuts, the paper, like the Daily Prophet, is 5.
Yes.
Black beetle eyes is 5 per scoop. And then, wait, There's the paper and then newspaper. So maybe we see it in two different. Yeah, the paper in the first book is 5, and then the newspaper in the 5th book is 1 nut.
Weird.
Yeah, you'd think it would cost more with, like, you know, inflation and stuff.
Hmm.
I wonder if one of them was, like, purchasing the paper and one was, like, with delivery. Who knows?
Ah, maybe.
Because I remember the first time we get the paper, the owl drops it off to Hagrid in the hut on the rock. Like,
that's true.
That owl had to, like, do some flying.
I also wonder if it depends, like, how hard it is to get to you.
Yeah.
The last thing I'm going to talk about as far as this goes is, like, how much it costs to... What is this? This was to go to Hogwarts, but it was just like some more things that like Harry had to buy. So like again, his wand is 7 galleons. A cauldron is 15, at least the one he bought. Brass scales and glass vials are 3 galleons each. Jeez. And then a telescope is about 5 galleons. It's just crazy. Like, I feel like there's no... Like, things that feel like they should cost less cost a lot, and vice versa.
Yeah, so, like, one of the, like, I think core problems is that, like you said, like, a unicorn hair is, what, 10 galleons? That's what Slughorn says at one point. Yeah, exactly. Because he, like, gets, he convinces Hagrid to give him, like, an entire, like, lock of unicorn hair that he had, like, hanging in his hut. And he says 10 galleons a hair or whatever, and we know that a wand is only like about 7 galleons, so I guess it's logical to say that maybe Ollivander is able to produce the wands less expensive because he sources the materials himself, but like,
yeah,
but like, why would he? And then like, and then also, do we think maybe that's something that's being subsidized somehow because a wand is such a like essential thing for people to own as a wizard or witch or wizard?
I don't know. Is the price of wands regulated, just like in America, like the price of certain foods is regulated that are considered like necessities, you know, or rather they're supposed to be, at least, but like, you know, milk is supposed to be regulated, eggs, that kind of stuff. I don't know, could be,
so,
because it is a necessity.
Well, see, I was thinking most people buy their first wand as a student. And so maybe it's like when you buy your first Apple product and you're a student.
You get the student discount.
That discount. Oh, man. Man. The best of that was like when you got the Adobe Suite for like nothing. It's like so
much more. Like a percentage of the actual price.
Yeah, it was like $100 instead of like $3,000 or something ridiculous like that.
Yes.
Like, I never want to get rid of the student account on my Creative Cloud. When we started, there was no Creative Cloud.
I know, you just want to throw that out there and installed it.
Lit. Anyway, your turn.
Let's talk about salaries. This is the last section.
Let's talk about you and me.
And this was literally me looking at like Glassdoor and taking estimates, except for some, like there was actually how much the salary is for the minister, like prime minister of the UK, and then like I took how much someone in parliament made for like a member of the Wizengamot, etc., etc. So for a healer, I took the salary, the estimated salary of a doctor over a nurse, because I feel like healers are more equivalent to doctors than nurses in terms of like schooling and skill level. So that is estimated to be around 78,000-79,000 pounds. Again, I specifically tried to look for salaries in the UK. So that would be equivalent to, rounded up, about 16,000 galleons a year. So that's pretty good.
It sounds so funny because, like, if you said $16,000 a year,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
I know. Like, it's so like nothing. Right. Yeah. poverty wages for the healers.
So the one oh my god, wait, what is wrong with my brain? Like, honest to god,
you've gotten like no sleep in the last 2 days.
I know,
cut yourself some slack.
The one career, I guess, job, whatever, that I did compare to an American job, just because I didn't know the equivalent in the UK to what I was trying to look up. I'm sure that they exist there, and I apologize. I just didn't take that extra step to look it up. But I was comparing an order to like a special agent in the FBI. So that salary is estimated to be around 120,000 US dollars a year. And that is equivalent to almost 20,000 galleons. So orers make more than doctors. Interesting. I already talked about like the barmaid comparison. They make approximately 25,000 pounds a year. So that is equivalent to 5,000 galleons. So again, like seeing that difference, like an orer, 20,000, a bartender, 5,000. The wizengamot, so I took how much somebody in parliament makes, which is $84,144 a year, to be exact.
British pounds.
And that is rounded up to about 17,000 galleons a year. And again, this is all based on real-time life as of today, what they would make. Because, you know, this converter is like to the hour accurate based on conversion rates. Teachers, it says about 30,000 British pounds. That is equivalent to 6,000 galleons. I'm just saying, what a scam. They deserve so much more than that. Oh my gosh. Ministry workers like Mr. Weasley, possibly, I would estimate maybe like 40,000 pounds in wages a year. So that's about 8,000 galleons a year. And then the prime minister in the UK makes 165,000 pounds a year. And that is equivalent to 33,000 galleons.
Whew.
Okay, so I could never decide if like, if I thought the Hogwarts teachers were just like K through 12 teachers, or if they were considered like professor level status, because like, think about like McGee and like Slughorn and Snape, and even Flitwick, they are like elite. Like,
yeah,
they are the best at what they do. So I feel like they're probably like publishing, like McGee is totally contributing to Transfiguration today. Like, she's totally getting published in Transfiguration today. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's like professor level. That's like what you do. As
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I can't figure out, because like Hogwarts is kind of weird because there's no college, or excuse me, that's American terminology.
University.
So there's no uni. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no uni. Like, after you graduate from Hogwarts, you just may do some like vocational training.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's like some training.
Work. Yeah. So like
aura training, super intense.
Right, exactly. And then healers, basically you intern as a healer. But like, I feel like because of the way they split it up, like you have your OWLs and then you have your newts, it feels like the last 2 years going towards the newts is almost more like collegiate work.
Mm-hmm.
Like your 6th year and your 7th year feels more collegiate. And
I agree.
Or university level. So I feel like you could say that the Hogwarts professors were effectively like professors.
That's true.
PhDs, yeah. So I wonder what that would look like for them as a salary. But
let's see, what is like a standard?
Mike's got the friendlies menu up on her computer.
I do.
They changed their logo.
But yeah, it's funny because I do remember when Slughorn was like coming back to work for Dumbledore, and he said, you know, he said he didn't make very much. He was like, you know, the salary, he said he told Dumbledore he wanted a pay raise. And then he said something to Harry later on about how his salary was modest, but also Slughorn has very expensive taste. So,
so actually, a professor makes about 90,000 pounds a year, and that would be closer to 15,000 galleons. So yeah. Better.
So yeah, so then like a teacher and a healer would be on the same level almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, a teacher would be a little more.
Yeah.
It would be more on the level of the Wizengamot, which is crazy cool, actually.
Yeah, which is crazy. Yeah. I still can't get over like orrs being like one of the highest paid professions.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, I guess it is a very dangerous job. Like, you're putting your life on the line. Like, Mad-Eye Moody lost how many appendages in his career?
Right.
Yeah. And like, I do, like, orrs are more than just a cop. They're like special agents. Like, Katie was almost like, I would kind of like almost compare them like to the military. Like,
I said, like Navy SEALs.
Yeah, like a Navy SEAL.
So it's somewhere between like special ops in the military, so like Navy SEALs or even CIA or MI5 in the UK. Is that what it is?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Phil is over it. You lasted so long.
You did, buddy. You did so good.
All right. I guess that means it's time for the lightning round. And there were so many questions. So I'm sorry if we don't get to all of them. We're going to have to pick and choose. And I know there were a lot of really good ones. So I will do my best. Let's see. Hey, you're typing.
He's typing with his nose.
Phil.
That's such a Marcus thing to do.
Phil.
That's
so funny.
Could someone please award some points for bingo to Hufflepuff? Oh, thank you. Vinny already did it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh, he is so wiggle wormy right now. Okay.
Almost there, bud.
Almost there. Oh my god, there's so many. Okay. I like this one. Megan with an H says, which is worth more, a galleon or a gold mark in the night court?
Probably a gold mark.
I kind of think that's a gold mark.
Ancient stuff over there. You know, I feel like it's like older and worth more.
I wonder if there's any info on that online. I don't think so. Okay. Marcus, do you want to pick? What do you think? Galleon, gold mark?
I don't remember the gold mark. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of hard.
I feel like it has higher value.
No offense to Harry Potter, but I feel like Sarah J. Maas probably did a better job.
She probably.
So I'm going to say the gold mark is worth more.
Oh, okay. So somebody on Reddit says that someone once did a deep dive on the ACOTAR currency and one gold mark is equivalent to $20. So if the author said that one galleon was equivalent to £5, the gold mark is worth more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. This is interesting. Jenny Fire says, do you think there's a form of credit or checks you can write in the wizarding world, or do you literally have to carry all currency with you? I mean,
it's a really good question.
They act as if they carry it.
Yeah.
Like you have to physically give it. That's interesting.
You're like, do they ever come up with
everything?
Like,
everything's a cash basis.
Yeah.
It's like so old school. It's so
weird. Because even there's that whole thing about Sirius buying the broom, which is fraught with problems, but he supposedly bought the firebolt for Harry by having them take the money out of his account.
So that was
like one of the big questionable
like mail order.
Yeah. And like, we know that Harry did mail order to get his potions book when he was able to take potions.
So I guess there's some way
to do it. Yeah.
Can you imagine like shipping off those heavy coins in a catalog just to get
there's 800 galleons with the package?
So So think about that owl that delivered the paper to Hagrid, and he put 5 canuts in there. Like that, those are bronze coins. Like if that owl does multiple deliveries by the time he's flying back, he's got a pouch full of bronze coins that can't be fun.
He's a swowl.
Oh my god. Marguerite, do you think that there's anything like 401ks or taxes within the Wizarding World?
There's gotta be something.
I'm sure that there's taxes. I don't know about a 401k though. That I don't know. I would say yes to taxes, and I'm iffy on a 401k.
Slughorn retired, but like, how did Slughorn retire? Do you just like eventually amass enough wealth that you can
maybe he got a pension?
Yeah, maybe he did get a pension. I could see like the Ministry of Magic and definitely Hogwarts having like pensions
or like some kind equivalent to social security.
So like pensions for most people are like, okay, you work 30 years, you get a pension, but wizards live longer. So in order to get a pension in the Wizarding World, you have to work 50 years, because that would kind of suck.
That's interesting. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Marguerite again asks, how do you think the first and second Wizarding Wars contributed to the economy? Are they stuck in recession/depression type situations compared to Muggles and their own economic situation? I do think that like the first Wizarding War did align with a world war. So like that one, everybody was probably on the same playing field in terms of recession, right?
Yeah.
But the second Wizarding War, yeah, I would assume that it did affect.
I definitely think you see an impact on the economy. Because somebody was actually asking earlier if there were homeless people in Harry Potter, and you don't really see any homeless people until Voldemort starts to rise to power and he actually gains power.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they created a second class of citizen because they took the wands away from all the Muggles or half-bloods.
Mm-hmm.
And so they created this segment of society that was the wandless, is how they referred to them, or one of the Death Eaters did.
And those were all the people on the run.
Some of them were actually in Diagon Alley begging people for money or begging people about the whereabouts of their loved ones and stuff. So,
and also in Half-Blood Prince, like Diagon Alley is like kind of a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely affecting. Yeah. I mean, the fact that like Ollivander and Fortescue are gone, so like those businesses are closed right now, and it just has this like quiet, dark feel when you go there. It totally affected the economy.
The first Wizarding World War was not during a world war. That was Fantastic Beasts. The first Wizarding, our Harry Potter first Wizarding War,
you're correct,
is in the 80s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah, you're right.
But that should technically be the first war. So like we're really like in like the third or fourth, to be honest. I never even thought of that before.
Oh, Katie.
Plot holes.
More plot holes.
Lindsay asks, how does Newt Scamander make money? He doesn't have a government job. He's not paid by a zoo. That's a lot of animals to feed.
Yeah.
I feel like he could totally sell some unicorn hairs or something that he has that he could like get from the animals and sell for money.
Yeah, that doesn't harm them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus
exactly. Like
he's got book sales eventually, but I mean not at first.
True. Oh, that's true. He is like an author. And like but I was just thinking like Slughorn was talking about how much Acromantula venom was worth. Like,
yeah,
he has so many like animals that he takes care of that he could do like non-harmful things that like their scales may be worth money, or this might be worth money, and they shed scales and this happens and stuff like that. So
well, what about those Acme eggshells? Those are worth a fortune. I mean, he gave those to Jacob and there's enough to start up a whole bakery.
Gallons of galleons.
There's so many good questions I want to ask all of them, but this episode is getting really long.
Not that I mind, but our puppy minds.
I know, he's just really over it.
You good boy.
Marguerite, again, I like your questions today. You have a lot of really good ones. Are there magical chimney sweepers or maintenance wizards or fees to keep Flu Network clean and orderly?
Someone responded to this and said, yes, Bert from Mary Poppins.
Yes, I saw that too. That was literally what I was going to say. They were like, Mary Poppins was definitely a witch and Bert was definitely a flu maintenance.
Sure, why not? I mean,
I bet you that's part of the network.
There's probably like a flu regulation, something, something at the ministry. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they have people that come and like, my flu isn't working right. And then they come and like magic, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is the magical maintenance when they break into the ministry? They wear the blue robes. I wonder if magical maintenance is just like a global thing.
That's true.
Magical maintenance?
My fireplace is on the fritz.
Can you fix it?
My flu is the flu.
Vinny asks, what would be your money making scheme in the wizarding world? This is probably my Slytherin side showing. I mean, do you know how much you could make if you just like set up a stand at a farmer's market and you just like totally made so much food from your garden, like way too much for you to eat? You could just sell produce.
You would just duplicate it. It would all be good that day.
You would literally, it would never be, you'd never run out. You could just continuously, and you could just continuously sell all the zucchinis you want, because you know I'm on a zucchini kick today.
Zucchinis,
apparently.
Zucchinis and mammoth fur.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, I feel like the way that I would make money is taking advantage of muggles.
Yeah.
Terrible. Like, yeah. If you want to manipulate the economy, you just earn a lot of muggle money and then like go get that converted into galleons. I don't know.
You could also, what if this is bad? Oh man. You could like give give leprechaun gold to muggles, like sell it to them as like something special, and then it just disappears.
Exactly. This is the kind of stuff I'm talking about doing.
It would be a Ludo. Vinny said like cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
earlier when you were saying that like the website had the like to the minute price, I was like, oh god, please don't make a wizard currency cryptocurrency.
What would it be called?
Somebody's made it.
What would it be called? Wiz currency.
Crypto Wiz.
Yeah, I like that.
Wiz coin.
Amy Wiz coin.
Yes.
Okay. Like, seriously, guys, there were so many good questions, but we're gonna stop there and go on to announcing that Lily won bingo. Congratulations to Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
And
was it enough? Oh, wait, I put that wrong in the doc.
That means Slytherin won the House Cup today. It's been a while.
Only by 20 points.
Hufflepuff was in second.
Gryffindor was only 20 behind them.
Yeah.
Us. Whatever.
So you guys know this we didn't close. Cheat, because you know, yeah, it was all close.
Sure, that's how you made it look, yeah, like you weren't cheating, just making it look close. Yeah.
It's a little too close.
Slytherin.
Yes, well done, Slytherin. Well done, Slytherin. However,
Slytherin still won.
Sam clapping.
I know. Oh,
that's what he looks like right now.
That's what I look like right now.
Literally. Oh, would it be funny if you were in the same shirt? Oh my god. Oh, okay.
Vinny always coming in clutch with the stickers.
Right. I'm sad that I didn't share. I'm getting, you know, next time, even though Marcus won't be on here, I'll just be sharing them anyway. Okay, who's ready for the fan story?
Me.
I'm ready.
This comes from Michelle. It's from April of 2021. She says, hi, guys. I'm a big fan and a pretty new listener. I wanted to take the time to thank you guys so much. I've been a huge Harry Potter nerd since about 2002. I'm 27, and most of my friends have seen the movies, but they aren't Potterheads. When I listen to you guys, I feel like I could fit right into your group, and I genuinely look forward to the episodes. Little trigger warning here. When I was younger, I tried to kill myself and was extremely depressed and still struggle with depression. The only things that make me happy when I'm extremely depressed are The Office, Seinfeld, Friends, and Harry Potter. You guys have become a part of that now. When I get to feeling really down and have bad thoughts, I will actually put on Swish and Flick. I will write down episodes as I listen that make me laugh and are silly, and I go back to those when I'm down. You four have become such a happy light in such a stressful time for all of us, and I just wanted to thank you all so much and let you know that your podcast is actually changing my life. Thank you guys so much for making root beer come out of my nose at my desk at work like 3 times. Love, Michelle the Hufflepuff. Oh my goodness, Michelle. First of all, go Puffs. I'm sorry we didn't win the house cup today. We tried.
Third or nothing.
No, we were second.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Second or nothing. But I, first of all, I'm so glad that you are here. Yes. I'm so glad you are part of our community. And I don't even have words because that, like, wow. Thank you.
It means a lot.
It means the world. Thank you so much. I'm sorry about the root beer, but also not sorry also because I'm glad you laughed.
I love The Office.
Yes. I also love The Office. And I really enjoy Friends. And yeah, Seinfeld. Friends too. Honestly. So thank you so much, Michelle. And again, just like thank you. That I don't even have words. I'm just choked up. It's very sweet. Thank you. I'm going to tell a really bad joke now because that's what I do.
Oh, yeah. I love dad jokes.
All right. What part of a play does Sirius Black hate the most? The curtain call?
Okay.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. It's so bad. That's, it's good.
That was actually a good joke.
So bad.
It's that bad, was, but like that was actually a good joke.
That's a bad joke.
It's really bad.
I mean, like compared to some of the other ones in that book, that was actually a good joke.
I'm gonna tell one more. Is being a Death Eater a fun job? No, it's soul crushing.
A Death Eater?
Oh, I said I'm a Dementor. Ah, oh, I screwed it up.
I was like, what?
I was like,
oh
what?
Man.
How does that make sense?
Say it again. Start over.
We'll
say
pretend
again.
Like we didn't hear it. Start
yeah.
over. All right.
Yeah, start over.
Is being a Dementor a fun job? No, it's soul crushing.
Wow.
I feel like I have to tell another one to make up for that, but I can't find one now.
On that note,
yeah,
make sure that you follow me and Katie on social media if you're so inclined. We are on Instagram at the Petrus Family. Fillmore was here for the ride too. If you want to follow him on Instagram, his Instagram is Fillmore the Cockapoo, and he's pretty cool. Marcus, would you like to plug anything?
Actually, I would. I am going to be working on the social media team for Dragon Con, and we nice. Are I'm working doing the TikTok for there.
It's very cool.
So if anybody would like to see some nerdy people in cosplay do funny skits or things like that on TikTok, if you would go follow the Dragon Con official TikTok account.
Awesome.
Doing the TikTok. That's right, Jenny.
When is Dragon Con?
So Dragon Con is Labor Day weekend.
Okay. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very yep. fun.
I'm always down it to watch starts, silly videos.
Yeah, it starts Thursday and it runs through that Monday. And it's like a everything con. Like there's Harry Potter stuff there. They have a Yule Ball every year that's really awesome.
That's so fun.
But yeah, it'll just be a bunch of skits and funny videos of nerds. So
doing
we'll
the
have
TikTok.
To go to that one sometime.
Doing the TikTok.
Maybe we'll do next year. Phil is so soft. I can't stop petting him.
He was loving whatever you were just doing. Know, like loving it.
I was petting his ears and his chin.
He even like
his
gave
little
a little
chinny
smile.
Chin.
Like, yeah, yeah.
His little chinny chin chin. Hi.
So what Meg is up to is fawning over our pooch.
Yes. Honestly, I have picked back up Throne of Glass. I'm trying to think.
You should be careful. You might get cut.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. I'm on the tandem read. I think I'm enjoying doing the tandem read. However, it is like a lot to keep track of because you're following so many different storylines and it's just like, I just want them all to be in one place so that I can just read the story and they're all there. But other than that, I'm trying to think the last time I did an update on my reading. I think that I don't know if I told everybody that I read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, but that book was so good. It was so good. So good. It, awesome bisexual representation. Mm-hmm. It was a great book to close out Pride Month. So yeah, that's kind of all I've been up to. I feel boring. Yep.
Katie? You're not boring. I don't really know if I have like any different update. Still reading Crescent City. I'm like actively reading Crescent City 2 as I run every time I
and
have
she's
been.
Gonna start Throne of Glass.
So daunting.
So I feel the same way, Katie.
Yeah.
Do it.
I feel the same way.
So daunting.
Okay, so are you done, Katie? I don't want to stomp on your stuff.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, still just running and listening to books. That's really my life right now. So yeah, you could go ahead.
So I saw your Instagram story. So you're doing 2 45-minute runs, and then you also are doing a 3-mile run to get ready for Dopey.
Yeah, it's like every week changes. So you always have 2 45-minutes, at least for a while, and then your mileage on the weekend will change, and then eventually I'll have to be doing like consecutive runs.
So it was kind of weird because you said it said 2 45-minute runs, but then it said 3 miles. So is it saying you have to do the 45-minute run has to be a 3-mile run?
No, like I do, like, for example, Tuesday will be 45 minutes, Thursday will be 45 minutes, and then Saturday will be a 3-mile run.
So it's like however far you can run in 45 minutes, it doesn't, there's no like,
say,
yeah,
there's no like
45-minute run, you did 3.5 miles.
I know. Like, so it's like a little bit of a break. I'm not complaining about it. But then like the next week is like 5.5 is my long. And then the one after that, I think it might be 7.
And then she has to do some simulation weekends where you do like, you run 4 days in a row, different increments. And then you like gradually build it up. I think when is your first like practice half?
September.
Okay. So she's going to do a practice half in September. And then do a half in November for Run Disney.
Yeah.
But then she also she does a Dopey simulation in December, don't you?
Pretty much, almost.
It's like you go to 23 miles, not 26, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So like, yeah, and you do a simulation in December of the weekend, pretty much. So you like do 4 days in a row and your last day is 23 miles.
I can't fathom it right now, but I signed up. I have to do it.
I gotta do it.
You'll get there, Katie. I have faith in you. I'm really impressed that A, you're doing this and you're doing it in Florida heat with the humidity. Like, oof.
I keep telling you though, like, imagine how good it's gonna feel when the humidity breaks, especially like actual Dopeys in January. It's gonna feel so good.
Yeah. Like the hardest part is like right now I'm like, don't push yourself too much. It's okay to go slow because you even doing that. By the time you get to cooler weather, like you will automatically have a nicer pace. Yeah, it's just about getting out there and moving your legs, really. I don't know.
As grandpa, can I say I'm very proud of you?
Aww, I'm very proud of you. Thank you. Thank you.
I've been reading a book series called The Tarot Sequence by Katie Edwards. It's really good. It is the first. So like Harry Potter I've read over and over again, and then y'all introduced me to Sarah J. Maas, and so I read that series over and over again, and then now I am obsessed with the tarot sequence. It is like a magical world. It's a different way of looking at magic. It's very interesting, and I'm now on my like third reread through of the books.
That's awesome.
I just love this world. So just to give you a little bit of a spoiler, the concept of magic here is based on tarot cards, and there are like 20 something houses, and each house has like special abilities that are common to that house based on the tarot card that their house is associated with. So like the main character is associated with the Sun tarot card. And so his house is known as the Sun Throne. And so they have special abilities associated with that. And it's really interesting. And then the other thing about the way their magic works is they use like sigil magic and stuff. I don't know. It's just really good. And I love it. Cool. And the author, so I was telling my friends about it. And I was like, I don't know how we got on the topic. And they're like, Marcus, the author is going to be at Dragon Con. And I was like,
what? Oh man.
So like the author had already like messaged me. And so I reached out to him and I was like, can we like meet up at Dragon Con? So I might get him to do like a little blurb on the TikTok. So
that's,
I'm really excited
so
about
cool.
It. Yeah.
That's yeah. Amazing. Dreams do come true.
Right?
Oh man. Maggie got a dog butt in your face.
Yep.
For real.
Anyway. Marcus, this was, first of all, a genius idea. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming on here with us and talking about all these really weird wizarding things that we will never have the answer to. But, you know, I just have to accept.
Speculate.
Yeah, I have to accept some headcanons right. And just yeah. Wonder forever about other things. But thank you so much for being here.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me.
Anytime. You're welcome back.
Yeah, Gramps. Anytime.
Tiffany is off the pod. It's now the Marcus, Megan, and Katie show.
Oh my god.
Tiffany can guest host maybe sometime down the road.
Oh my god.
Whoa. I'm scared of Tiffany, so I'm not gonna get on board with that.
I do not condone that.
Jenny says we're the show.
Okay. I like that.
Tiffany's grounded.
Tiffany's yeah. Grounded. Oh no.
She's grounded.
How the turntables.
You mean how the tables have turned?
No, it's an Office reference.
Oh.
Tiffany would appreciate it.
I like The Office. I just haven't watched it.
I appreciate
sorry.
It, Katie.
Thank you. And you know what? Our fan story person, Michelle, would appreciate it. She likes The Office.
You make it sound like I've never watched The Office. I just forgot about
well,
one.
Clearly
phrase.
You haven't.
You know what? That concludes this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. And don't let Katie get you down.
We didn't say what this episode was for.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot,
now you
right.
Need to okay. Redo it. I this mean, that's staying, but.
It's for trust fund kids. And.
What other weird thing we talk about today? I mean, it was a lot of weird things. Trust fund kids and well-behaved pooches.
Aw, you were a well-behaved poochie. Yeah.
Good job, Phil.
Good job, Phil. Phil. All right. Now that concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the Muggles get you down. Or Katie. Bye.
Wow!
I should have been for Galleons of Galleons.
Oh. And like, I don't like to think that I have a customer service voice, but I totally do. I totally
oh,
do.
Oh, everybody does. Everybody yeah. Does. Especially like, if you're a millennial, you've worked in some job where you were like trained 100% yeah. That you had to like, sounds
Disney.
So sickly sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, do your customer service voice, Marcus. Come on. I'll do mine if you do
hey.
Yours.
Hey, this is Marcus. How can I help you?
Oh, my God.
That is different. I'll do my Starbucks spiel. Okay, hold on.
Do you remember?
Hi, thanks for choosing our Starbucks. What can I get started for you today? Did I sound like a robot?
You just sounded pleasant.
Okay, Katie, it's your turn.
I don't know what I guess I just answer the phone. I'll be like, hi, this is Katie.
You do, yep.
Okay,
you have
so
like a higher inflection
us,
at the end
yeah.
Of your words.
All of us higher up our voices.
It's always like higher. Should I lower my voice instead of going hi?
Be like, hi, this is Katie.
Sup, this is Katie.
Hi, this is Katie.
Hi. I'm Priest Marcus. How can I help you?
maybe I'll start talking like the Slavs in Zootopia.
Yeah. Welcome.
Do your best Vader. Do your best Darth Vader impression.
Oh God.
Oh man. Luke, I am your father. Luke.
Luke, I can't do it. Paul can do it. I can't do it.
You do the breathing, guys. Marcus Smith the best. Phil just looks at you and wags his tail. He loves you so much.
Phil, I love you too.
Can you hand me a tissue? I have an issue.